Welcome. One more round of the Bundesliga before the final international break of the season. Leipzig finally defeat Bayern Munich after 5 tries. Are they back on the winning path, maybe even towards a trophy? Stuttgart have won their 5th game under Taifun Korkut. Is he a better manager than we thought? And with 7 matches to go, we discuss the race to avoid the drop. This is Tribuna Weekly. Davis Van Opdorp here with Matt Ford. Matt, take us through the match day.
German Federal League, Division 1, match day 27. Sportclub Freiburg 1, Club for Agility Games Stuttgart 2. Club for Physical Exercise Prussia Mönchengladbach 3. Gymnastics and Sports Society 1899 Hoffenheim 3. Sports Community Frankfurt United 3. The First Football Club of Mainz 05-0. Football Club Augsburg 1. Sport Club Werder Bremen 3. Hamburger Sport Club 1. Hertha Berlin Sport Club 2. Club for Agility Games Wolfsburg Football 0. Football Club Schalke 04 1. Ball Games Club Prussia 09 Dortmund 1. Hanoverian Sport Club of 1896, 0. The First Football Club of Cologne, 2. Bayer 04 Leverkusen, 0. Lawn Ball Sport Leipzig, 2. Football Club Bavaria Munich, 1.
All right, let's start there, Matt, with the game in Leipzig. As you mentioned, Leipzig have finally defeated Bayern Munich in their 5th try overall. I think the best way to start this discussion is to put on our Jupp Heynckes hats, because he made some very interesting rotational decisions, basically playing with a very strong team in the Champions League against Besiktas, and then playing with a more of an A-minus B-plus team against RB Leipzig, which was a very interesting tactic considering that if Bayern Munich had won that game, that means that the next week against Borussia Dortmund, they could have won the title. Do you think that was the right decision to play a strong team in the Champions League and then play a weaker team right before the international break?
I think we should point out that they can still win the league when they play the next game against Dortmund anyway, although it's no longer completely in their own hands. I think they need to rely on Schalke not beating Freiburg.
I mean, it's not like their title hopes are in major danger either.
Title collapse from Bayern Munich. So I think in terms of the Bundesliga, I think the decision is pretty much irrelevant. However, I would say that actually, I think it probably, given focusing on the Champions League, I think it was probably a correct decision, actually. I know we can argue quite easily saying that they went into that bit away leg at Besiktas 5-0 up, so there was no need to, but Heynckes is looking at this now from a point of view of the Bundesliga's wrapped up, they've got a couple of important cup games, so we'll be focusing on that too, but the main focus now has to be the Champions League, and I think he was trying to send a signal saying that this is my Champions League squad, this is my best team, my best 11, this is what we're aiming for now, so we're taking it very, very seriously, and we're not going to take any prisoners at all. So I think I can understand that from that point of view. Of course, it played right into Red Bull's hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you definitely saw that in the game, that after that first goal, that Bayern really had trouble basically matching the intensity with Leipzig, and I think that was just it seems to me like that was just a product of this game didn't really matter, because it's not like they could have wrapped up the title that day. They were the last match day of that, or the last game of that match day. I presume that they saw the results from the match day leading up to their game, so they knew if their game had importance or not.
That's interesting. That's actually. Do you think that, obviously because they played after everyone else, do you think had Dortmund and Schalke not won, do you think Heynckes would have gone for it, or we can win it here and wrap it up
now? You never know, because And now Dortmund, of course, played in the early afternoon on Sunday. Yeah. So they had the Cologne and Leverkusen game. I think it's hard.
I think he made his decision. I personally don't think it changed anything.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea. I think it's hard not to look at the results, especially if you're on the verge of winning a title. But at the same time, I think that there is, like you said, there is some long-term planning. There's some long-term planning that I discussed a few weeks ago in the first leg of the Besiktas game. I do believe that the reason why Frank Ribery and Arjen Robben was playing so much in the beginning of the second half of the season was because Heynckes wanted to not use them in the first leg against Besiktas and basically getting their egos up to the point where they could sit and he wouldn't lose the dressing room. But I think that there is more long-term planning in this.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But going back to the actual game itself, you mentioned the word intensity. I think that's absolutely key from both Bayern and Red Bull's point of view. It's something that had been lacking in RB's game. I think that was their first win in five, I think, after...
Yeah, the first win in a long time.
Yeah, bad results against Frankfurt, Cologne, Stuttgart, and who was the other one? There's another one, wasn't there?
Well, Dortmund. They drew against Dortmund.
Bad results. They didn't win. But yeah, it was interesting to see. I mean, that Hasenhüttl's team, that their success is built on intensity. It's what gave them such a successful season last year, and it was a huge contrast with the way Bayern lined up. I think we mentioned obviously Bayern took a relatively early lead, but that was probably more down to the fact that RB lined up in a. They didn't line up in their usual 4-2-2-2 formation. Right. There was a slight change. It was more of a 3 at the back/5.
Sandro Wagner, who scored the goal, did take advantage of Ibrahim Konate. And that guy is
definitely
18 years old. Yeah. I mean, is it really that hard to fathom that a 29-year-old who's had basically almost everything happen to him in his career took advantage of an 18-year-old whose career is just starting?
Yeah, they hadn't adapted. I mean, taking nothing away from, I think it was Kimmich put the ball in, wasn't it? Which was a fantastic cross, and Wagner makes no mistake. Makes no mistake there. But
It was Hammers, sorry.
Yeah, you're right, it was Hammers. Once RB settled into the game, though, the intensity was clear for all to see. I don't think Sebastian Rudi ever got a grip on proceedings in midfield. On the other hand, Naby Keita had one of his best games this calendar year. And he topped that off with a goal, very well taken, and again, intensity again. It didn't quite come off for him the first time, but he persevered, and that ball was going to end up in the net, whether anyone liked it or not.
Right.
And that willingness, that raw power and will to win was completely lacking from Bayern throughout that game. Let's not forget, Hasenhüttl made changes as well. He started Werner on the bench. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he intended to play him at all, if necessary, given that, I mean, obviously they're so far behind anyway, it's no longer a title game as far as they're concerned. But obviously he brought him on because Sabitzer got injured early on. And then I think he brought him off before the end as well. So Werner was substituted on and off in the same game.
Didn't play with a traditional fullback at all.
Yeah.
I think that was the other noteworthy change to his tactics. But continue, sorry.
But it worked well. It was like watching the RB of last season, and it showed. I think particularly in the second goal, the way I think was it Keita pounced on the ball in midfield and played the pass to Timo Werner. It was absolutely classic, and I thought it was just naive of Bayern and naive of Heynckes. Well, particularly the players on the pitch, to even play a pass into that area, if not being absolutely 100% sure, because everyone knows that is precisely the area of the pitch where Red Bull want to win the ball back and then pile forward as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it was absolutely a textbook performance from them. I think Hasenhüttl and Ranić both said after the game that was pretty much as near to perfection as they could imagine.
Is this a turnaround point for them, though? Because, like you said, they did not have a good run of form. They, I think they performed much better than I expected, given the run of form against Zenit St. Petersburg in the Europa League. Have they kind of reached this turning point in their season, considering the fact that they are now still fighting for the Champions League and maybe going for Europa League title as well?
Yeah, from a motivational and from a man management point of view, I think we can certainly see it that way. The ground was bouncing. They're also into the quarterfinals of the Europa League. They're not completely out of the running to get back in that Champions League place, although I reckon it will be difficult given the consistency with which Schalke are grinding out results, and even Dortmund, while not looking good at all, we'll come on to that later. They're grinding out results too. Frankfurt are looking good as well, so that'd be difficult. But yeah, I mean, there's absolutely no reason why they shouldn't take that as a huge piece of inspiration and move on from there. So that's a huge result for them. It's where they want to be. It's their stated aim to be up there challenging with Bayern and ultimately one day going for the league. And I think there might have been a little bit of a chip on the shoulder or an inferiority complex perhaps sneaking in, given that it had taken them 5 attempts to get something over them. In the previous game, maybe the cup game aside, earlier on this season, which was a closer affair, but the league games, Bayern have battered them.
Mm-hmm.
They've not even come close.
Even when they had a lead last season in Leipzig, I mean, Bayern Munich came back and won 5-4. Yeah. So.
And that showed so many... Yeah, it showed that Bayern had more nous to win in terms of match game, in terms of game management on the pitch, more experience in terms of players, more options off the bench, better management. Just they were superior in every department. So I think that's a huge, in terms of psychologically for those RB players, that's an absolutely huge result for them. And I think they'll push on.
All right, it seems, Matt, that Stuttgart have forgotten how to lose. Especially under their new coach, Typhoon Korkut. This, I think, when he took over, I believe the three of us, you, me, and Jonathan Harding, were all in unison in saying, "What the heck are they doing with their coaching situation?" And now you look at them, and they have 5 wins in their last 7 matches. There were 2 other matches were draws, so that means 17 points in a possible 21. And now that they, instead of fighting for basically to avoid relegation, there are stories that are coming out in Stuttgart that they might actually make a run in the Europa League. How do you explain this turnaround under Typhoon Korkut?
I don't know why you're asking us. We're the idiot journalists who clearly don't know what we're talking about. I think John certainly, and if I listen back, maybe me as well, I think we owe Typhoon Korkut and those in charge at Stuttgart a huge apology. Sorry, lads, and yeah, absolutely top marks and huge credit and hats off to the work that Typhoon Korkut has done there. I think if we look into it a little bit deeper, though, there is obviously more to it, and it's slightly more nuanced. What's gone on? I think the key thing that you sorted out obviously is Stuttgart line up defensively. Again, if anything raised more eyebrows than the appointment, it was a decision to then put Holger Badstuber into midfield,
right?
In this holding midfield role in front of the back four, which I think Badstuber himself said he hadn't played in since like Bayern Munich's under 13s or under 14s or something. But that turned out to be a masterstroke. In his first 4 games, they only conceded 1 goal, and that was in a 1-1 draw away at Wolfsburg.
Wolfsburg, yeah.
That's been obviously absolutely key to them bouncing up the league the way they have.
Right. I mean, and you also look at the fact that Mario Gomez is now back in form. It seems like there always seems to be a coaching change after a coaching change on the teams that Mario Gomez is on. There always seems to be like a resurgence by him. But it's so strange because I talked about it with Felix a little bit last week. He's playing with Daniel Ginczek. It's not like he's playing up alone where he's used to, and I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, it's not like he's playing off a ten or a false nine sort of player, is he? Either. I mean, we've got 2 out and out strikers up there, but it's obviously working out. However, I would draw a little bit of a contrast. I think that Stuttgart's defensive work under Korkut, as we were just mentioning, I think that's planned, that's calculated, and that's worked out well.
Mm-hmm.
No complaints there. I do think that, yeah, the way the Ginchek-Gomez combination up front has come off, I think there's maybe a little bit of fortune in that. I think that's maybe...
Why do you say that?
I think that's maybe often the case with strikers. You know, you said there just a couple of seconds ago that it's quite coincidental that every time a new manager comes in at various clubs, it's Mario Gomez just suddenly seems to hit everyone the form. And those results following the Wolfsburg game, it was 3-1-0 wins. Gomez scored two of them, I think, and Ginchek the other. They're only one goal margins. Mm-hmm. Okay, on one hand, you can argue, okay, you've got lucky that your strikers are functioning, your strikers are working. On the other hand, you can say, well, that's their job. So it's working. But yeah, I think the defensive work is much more calculated, and that's a plan that's come off much more clearer to see. The work up front, slight bit of fortune, but fortune favours the brave, doesn't it? And I wouldn't take it away from him. It's been an impressive few weeks.
Yeah, watching the game that they had against Freiburg, they also definitely play much more direct than I think they did under Hannes Wolf. You see Andreas Beck much more involved in the build up and not just running down the right flank, but also playing the passes forward into midfield. And it seems like when Stuttgart have the ball, they have much more intent when they go forward than they did, I think, again under Hannes Wolf. And for a more defensively structured team, that's really important to have, is to have a way to get the ball into attack fairly quickly. And I think that's, and you also see that when you see Mario Gomez drop deep, he's dropping deep in order to play those balls sometimes as far forward as he can. And under Hannes Wolf, he tried to rely on Chadla Kokolo and Takuma Osano and Anastasios Donis and all of these like shorter, quicker, creative players. And this, it's interesting that before, under Hannes Wolf, he didn't have Daniel Ginchek and Mario Gomez at his disposal. But now that Typhoon Korkut and has both of those players at his disposal, that he's trying to get them the ball as quickly as possible, because he knows that they can do, they're both experienced strikers, he knows that they can do something with it.
I think that's correct. I think for the reasons that you've mentioned, one, of course, it is a much more direct style of play, but it's also a much more simple style of play. It's a shame John's not been able to make it tonight, because we were having a discussion about this in the office the other day, saying that it seemed that under Hannes Wolf, and it's perhaps, you know, it's to Hannes Wolf's credit that he wanted to get that team playing not just with a single predictable simple direct plan A, but he wanted to be able to build a team that can adapt, that can be flexible, mm-hmm. that can adapt to changing situations in the game and pose opponents problems from various angles. And as you mentioned, you know, he started with various combinations of attacking players, and it wasn't just a case of playing directly to Gomez and Ginchek up front, whether they were available at the time, all the time, or not, or to Simon Terodde in the first half of the season, which wasn't working out either. However, I then posed the question to John, saying, well, is that really, as admirable as it is, as in terms of an approach from Hannes Wolf, is that really sensible for a team who have only just been promoted? Right. Surely the first aim should be
to stay up.
Yeah, no matter how we do it, let's just stay up and build on from that. And that's probably what Typhoon Korkut has brought in. And it's got to the point now where they're not just staying up, although I think... someone in the club said that they were not quite safe yet, because have they quite got to the 40-point mark yet?
No, they're 39, so 39. They're not quite there yet. That's 40-point mark in the Bundesliga. Yeah, so you're basically staying up.
Don't get carried away just yet, Stuttgart fans. But I think there's something to be said for perhaps Typhoon Korkut just not overcomplicating things. Is that to do with experience? Can we lay a little bit of blame at Hannes Wolf's door there, saying, okay, great, you want to produce a more flexible and more varied team and more attractive football, but there's a time and place? I don't think that's unfair to say that.
Well, it brings up my next question, which is, how sustainable is this form under Typhoon Korkut? Because this form could continue to the end of the season. I'm not suggesting that it can't. What I would suggest is that next season, after a preseason, I don't know if Typhoon Korkut is also able to take Stuttgart to another level. And basically, under Korkut, they would avoid relegation, but not necessarily do so impressively. Do you think that this is something that's sustainable under Typhoon Korkut?
I think it's definitely sustainable in the short term in terms of the end of the season. And that's also partly down to the fact that the Bundesliga, if we're being honest, is relatively weak this season,
I think. That's true. I mean, you look at this form. In any other league, this might have gotten them to just below mid-table. But because I think because the mid-table is so mediocre, if you get a good run of form like this, you can vault up the table very, very quickly.
Yeah, and I think more needs to be added. If we're looking ahead to next season, they might even be in Europe next season, which would be an incredible turnaround. I think if they could even finish seventh, and then depending on who wins the cup, that could be enough for them to get into the Europa League qualifying round, which in terms of Stuttgart's heritage as a football club is exactly where they want to be. That's how they see themselves. You know, they're one of the biggest clubs in the country. I think they've competed in Europe, I think I read 27 times over the past 55 years. This is a huge club who expect to be there. Football wise, I personally don't think they have enough just yet. Probably stand a slightly better chance than Cologne did, because it's not a completely unexperienced team that they've got there. But I think this is a chance now, and Typhoon Korkut has deserved that chance to show that he can. Yeah, he's stabilised the defence. That's great. He's proven he can do that. He's getting goals out of his strikers. We can't complain about that. Is that enough to compete in Europe and on two fronts? I don't know. I think they need more in midfield. We said that a lot of the success has been based on moving Holger Badstuber in there alongside Askasibar.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that is going to prove to be a long-term solution or just more of a short-term fix, I think it's more of a short-term. I think you're going to need specialists in there if you want to really build on and fulfil the club president, Wolfgang. Is it Wolfgang Fujic or Dietrich, the president, said that by 2022 they want to have a concrete established place in the top third of the Bundesliga. These are all huge aims at Stuttgart, and rightly so. That's the sort of aims they should be setting themselves. But at the moment, that team isn't ready for that, not all the way through, and especially not in midfield. But I think, yeah, why shouldn't Korkut now have a chance to prove that he can do that? He's not done it yet in his managerial career, where I believe he's never even had a positive win record as a coach at his previous clubs. He has that now at the moment. So yeah, this is his chance and he deserves it. Europe might be a bit too soon, just for the time being though.
So there's definitely a topic that we have to address, and that is the comments from former Borussia Dortmund coach Thomas Tuchel in a Dortmund coach in the last few days. And he came out and said that in his testimony, saying that the handling from Dortmund chairman Hans-Joachim Watzke of the incident of playing the match against AS Monaco less than 24 hours after the Dortmund bus attack did factor into his decision to eventually part ways with the club. And he went even so far as to say the disagreement between him and Hans-Joachim Watzke on the issue was as simple as the fact that Thomas Tuchel was on the bus and Hans-Joachim Watzke was not. Very powerful testimony from Tuchel there. What are your thoughts, Matt, on this? Because this is really the strongest words we've had from Tuchel on this issue since he was sacked as the Dortmund coach.
Yeah, I don't think it's any surprise that these strong, very emotional, like you said, very powerful comments and very powerful descriptions of what's gone on have come out now. As you said, Tuchel and some of the Dortmund players have been, well, they've been testifying in court today. We're recording this Monday evening, so it was during the course of today. And yeah, as you said, there's been some very powerful comments have come out, not least of which Thomas Tuchel's, but we also had Marcel Schmelzer and Roman Weidenfeller saying that their everyday lives are still affected by what's gone on. people walking behind them in the street, or just hearing noises, hearing cars, any sudden movements and noises, that they're thinking twice about it. I think it's been difficult to listen to some of it and really try to comprehend what they're going through. Almost exactly a year after what could have been tragic, and luckily resulted in nothing more than a broken bone for Mark Barcher. But
who is no longer at the club. He plays for Real Betis in Sevilla now.
Yeah, but was given a good send-off, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
At the home game against Red Bull Salzburg, mm-hmm. wasn't it, where he was introduced to the... He was on the pitch before the game and he was in front of the Zuidtribune and he was given a good send-off. But, yeah, I think while the physical scars heal, I don't think any of them... have really got over the mental thing that leaves behind. And the debate at the time, to come back to Thomas Tuchel, was that we all knew that the bus attack had and its consequences had a direct effect on the relationship between Thomas Tuchel and Watzke.
I think we really have to define what that is too, because I think there is a belief that Hans-Joachim Watzke could have said to UEFA to not play the game against AS Monaco. That was the first leg of their quarterfinal tie. UEFA was in a really, really tough spot because at that time in April, the schedule really picks up, and it's not like there is in the last 16 where there is a spot for to basically postpone a game for even a week if necessary. Who knows? This could have maybe been the only opportunity that UEFA saw to postpone the game too. Now, Thomas Tuchel said that to play a game less than 24 hours after such an attack is basically the words inhumane have been used, saying that these players are only humans first and players second, and you have to address these human needs first and before addressing them as players and trying to say that they're under contract and they have to play these games even if they are not ready to. But who knows if Hans-Joachim Watzke could have done more. And it's interesting that this disagreement had led to the fact that, I mean, he said so himself that that's what caused him to leave Borussia Dortmund. If he said if the attack had not happened, he could have still at least fulfilled his contract there.
Yeah, there was also the thought, I think, from Watzke's and from the club's side that Tuchel was trying to almost play this more human card in order to make him seem better as opposed to the club. So the whole thing got quite distasteful at the time, really, when you considered what the players and what those on the bus had gone through and what evil intent was behind that attack. However, I think even at the time, psychologists said that there's absolutely no way the players could play. The players have come out in court in their testimony since saying that absolutely nobody was thinking about that football match just 24 hours later, less than 24 hours later, after an attack on their lives. There's more important things. And I think we can come out with comments like UEFA were in a hard place or UEFA didn't have any other options because of a sporting schedule. It all pales into absolute insignificance compared to what happened and what potentially could have happened to make it even worse. So I think Watzke could have refused to play. And even if that meant Borussia Dortmund being kicked out of the competition, so what? It's only a football competition. But I think there's also a case here that perhaps Watzke, if we're gonna give him the benefit of the doubt, perhaps he didn't quite realise or appreciate the extent of what had actually gone on in the immediate moments following it, when these negotiations then had to take place in the heat of the moment. I think that was the crux of the issue for Thomas Tuchel, who said, no, I was sat on that bus with my players going to a game. I experienced what went on. And although Tuchel said that he himself personally has not suffered any psychological consequences from it, a lot of the players clearly have. And I think, yeah, he certainly felt that... UEFA certainly looked at an inhumane way and were forced into play. And Tuchel then thought that he didn't get the backing from Vatska, whether that's because Vatska was being purposely inhumane and hard-headed and siding with UEFA and wanting to play, or whether it's because he perhaps underestimated the psychological seriousness of the situation at the time. I'd be willing to give Vatska the benefit of the doubt and say that I think he probably, there was a case in just simply underestimating that, which is nevertheless a fault. I don't think it's surprising now that Tuchel's come out today and said, well, yeah, there was a disagreement, because at the end of the day, it was me sat on that bus and not Hans-Joachim Vatska.
So the testimony is in a number of different places. I think I can speak for both of us. We encourage you to check out what has transpired in this case, because it's definitely a groundbreaking case, not just in German football, but in football and in sports all over the world. Let's move on to the shout from Rosette. Thank you guys again for voting for our topic this week, which is we're going to make a few relegation predictions, which thank you to you guys for choosing that, because I think some of them are rather easy. But we are since you guys decided, of course, we're going to nonetheless talk about it. I think you mentioned this off air. I'm going to mention this now. I think we have kind of put the final nails on the Hamburg coffin after the first game under Christian Titz and losing that game against Hertha Berlin. We were talking about it a few weeks ago.
I think you were right in the end. I was desperate to give Hamburg points against Hertha.
Hertha Berlin, exactly. Yeah. And I refused to.
Although in the first half, it was a good performance. Mm-hmm. I think that has to be said if we're going to talk about that game. Obviously, it was Christian Titz's first game in charge of the Hamburg first team. Just for a little bit of background on him, he's been in charge of Hamburg's second team.
We talked about him last week.
For the past 3 years.
Yep.
And he's done great work there. He's a bit of a footballing tactical expert. He's written books, coaching manuals. He runs a coaching website. So he certainly knows what he's talking about and wanted to instill his possession-based and footballing philosophy on the first team. And I think he did that with the help of a lot of youth players in that game against Hertha at the weekend. Mm-hmm. I believe it was Hamburg's youngest Bundesliga starting 11 since January 1974.
And you only have to read the comments of Kyriakos Papadopoulos to hear how he felt about this.
Yeah, Papadopoulos said that it's not, trying something new is not always the best solution, is what he said. He said that a lot of the players, including himself, of course, so maybe he's backing himself up here, saying that a lot of the players who were left out were players who had saved Hamburg in relegation battles in recent years. Although the one that saved them last year was Luca Waldschmidt, who also still plays predominantly for Hamburg's second team in the fourth division. He came on as a sub, but no, the first half was impressive. I thought Hamburg moved the ball particularly well through midfield and posed a threat down the left with Ito and with Douglas Santos. But they couldn't keep it up, and they wasted too many chances. They literally could have been 2 or 3 goals up at half-time. It was one of the best performances I've seen from them this season. But look what happens. Hamburg being Hamburg, look what happens. They end up losing a game they should have won. And the fans who started the day cheering the team bus ended up fighting amongst themselves.
Yeah. All right, so if we look at 14th, basically the bottom third of the league, that's 14th down to 18th. This is Freiburg at 30 points, Wolfsburg at 25 points, Mainz also at 25 points, but an inferior goal difference. I believe the goal difference between the two of them is 5. Cologne at 20 points, still hanging around.
The corpse is alive, said Leonardo Bittencourt.
And, of course, Hamburg on 18. Now, we could even go as high as also 13th with Hanover at 32 points. Werder Bremen is also at 33 points in 12th place.
For me, the cut-off point's Bremen there. Bremen are playing far too well to go down. Another impressive performance away at Augsburg.
Yeah, that's true.
Florian Kohfeldt has got them playing. That won't be the issue for me. Hanover are in it, having not won in 5 now, I think.
Okay.
So yeah, that's that's certainly a problem.
They've kind of been dragged down after their impressive start.
They have, yeah.
As good as Stuttgart have been in the second half, Hannover have not been.
Yeah. Freiburg are always going to struggle down there, just given the resources that they have. Although, shout out to Neil Peterson's finish. That was an absolutely fantastic finish.
Yes, if you have not seen that finish. We talked about that game in the last section from Stuttgart, but if you have not seen that Niels Pedersen finish, that is definitely something that you'll have to Google after you listen to this.
But the key now is that I think predominantly those, yeah, that relegation playoff spot, Wolfsburg, Mainz, or even Cologne. Mainz are in absolute free fall. That was a disastrous performance against Frankfurt.
Yeah,
they didn't turn up. The defense was all over the place. There was no will to win. There was no plan up front. And Frankfurt put three past them for the second time in a couple of months. It was the same score in the cup as well, wasn't it? I don't see where Mainz are going to go from here. They have to play Cologne away.
Mm-hmm.
If Cologne win that, Cologne will be within 2 points of them.
I think that's the biggest 6-pointer left in this relegation fight. And of course, definitely. I mean, if I also am looking at this, I think if Cologne is going to take over a team and get into that playoff spot, which would be incredible, by the way, it would be their fellow Carnival club Mainz.
Yeah, although they go to Wolfsburg away on the final game of the season.
Right, but the thing is with the final day of the season, it's always difficult because there's a lot of things that could be determined by then, and not to mention the fact that I mean who knows, because Bruno Labbadia has not gotten his side going at all since he took over Wolfsburg, so they could definitely continue their free fall themselves.
They were very close to 3 points against Schalke, though. It was only Ralf Fährmann's penalty save. I think if that goes in, I couldn't see Schalke scoring. Mm-hmm. I think 3-1-0 wins on the bounce half of Schalke.
Mm-hmm.
You can see why. Yeah. We said before that front three is probably good enough for the Bundesliga, but nothing more. And it took an own goal from Robin Knocker. I think was it in the 86th minute or 85th minute?
Yeah. So
to give them a win. So Wolfsburg were close to points there, but didn't get it, which is typical when luck goes against you when you're down there. Personally, I can see Cologne. If I don't think it's more likely that they'll catch Mainz than Wolfsburg, but 7 games to go, 5 points in it.
Right,
it's all to play for.
Well, I mean, we can also look also at some of the fixtures too. I mean, Wolfsburg have to play Hertha, Freiburg, and Augsburg. Augsburg before they play Gladbach, who also haven't been in the best form. Augsburg have kind of dropped off a little bit after. I think they've secured a mid-table position. But I think that
very poor against Bremen though at the weekend.
Yeah,
very
so cool. That's why I think that Wolfsburg on their day could definitely a not just a game where they could get points, but a very winnable game if Bruno Labbadia finally gets Wolfsburg into the win column. And then you look at their schedule is tougher, especially at the end. I mean, their last three games are against Leipzig, Dortmund, and Bremen. So
that's true. When you take that into account, I can certainly see why they're the more likely team that Cologne could potentially catch.
Exactly. But Cologne's schedule is not any easier. I mean, they do have that 6-pointer against Mainz in 2 weeks, in 2 match days from now. But they have to play Hoffenheim. They have to play Hertha Berlin, who is always a tough team, and they have to play Schalke and Bayern Munich still.
They do. Although, of course, by that point, Bayern will be champion, so who knows what's possible there.
It's true.
I think they only got beat 1-0 there this season in the league, and they've already been to Berlin and won in the cup, so that they'll take heart from that. Players are coming back. Yuri Osako's back from injury. Leonardo Bittencourt's back from injury. Simon Zoller's back from injury. If you think about the state of Cologne just before the winter break, when they went to Belgrade with a C team, effectively, and then Stefan Rutenbeck in charge for his first ever game, it was like, where are they getting these players from? Vincent Cosciello has been a fantastic acquisition. Someone points. I think it was Felix. I think actually pointed out that the tackle that he put in on Jonathan Tarr against Leverkusen at the weekend. I think he's about 30 centimetres bigger and weighs 30 kilograms more. And Cosiello, the smallest player on the pitch, absolutely crunched into him and then got up as if to say, yeah, so what? So he's been impressive. And I know, admittedly, Leverkusen were down to 10 men and probably played their worst game of the season. But Cologne, especially in the first half, and especially when they went down, when they had a man extra, were good value for that win. The fight has returned, and as we said before, a brilliant quote from Leonardo Bittencourt, I think, said that the corpse is knocking on the coffin.
I think a lot of neutrals in the Bundesliga are hoping that Cologne make it out. They have a very interesting, a lot of interesting squad decisions to make if they do end up going down. But there's been recent comments from Jonas Hector even saying that he would go down. He would go down with Cologne. Yeah. If who knows if he will actually live up to those words.
Personally, I think that's a nice comment to make. But as soon as Borussia Dortmund come knocking.
Yeah, and offer him maybe twice as much as he's making.
Timo Horn as well has been completely honest, and I think would also publicly say, of course, he'd go from a personal point of view. He'd go down with Cologne, but he's far too good, so I think he'd be another one that would leave. The performances of Cosiello, I doubt they'd be able to keep him in the second division. I don't think Yuya Osako would go in the second division either. It'll be difficult, but. With having brought in Armin Fay as sporting director, they have already started building for that potential relegation, which looked absolutely nailed on. But seven games to go and 5 points, plus games against direct rivals Mainz and Wolfsburg.
All right,
be a miracle if they did it.
Let's put your feet to the fire now. I want to hear your bottom with seven games to go after the course with this international break coming up. Who is your bottom three?
18th, Hamburg.
Okay.
17th, Mainz. 16th, Cologne.
That's what I'm going to go with too. I think they haven't had the best form in the second half. They have tailed off after their new manager bump under Stefan Rutenbeck, but you never know.
You never know. I mean, with my heart speaking, I would like to see Wolfsburg go down. Sorry to any Wolfsburg fans might be listening, but I think that team needs it. I think the club needs it.
Although we've said before, if Wolfsburg go down, they're in danger of completely disappearing.
They are, but. I would personally rather see them go down than Mainz. I think Mainz are a good club who do a lot of good work, and they've suffered hugely from the departure of Christian Heidel. They've tried to replace like, as they did with Klopp and Tuchel, they've tried to replace like for like and promote from within with Sancho Schwarz, and that is absolutely laudable. They do a lot of good work. They do a lot of good social work in that city as well. They're a very, very impressive community club. With a good, loyal local support, I really hope they stay up. But I think Wolfsburg, with their more favourable run in and with Labbadia in charge, I fancy Wolfsburg probably to pip them to it. Cologne will then catch Mainz.
All right, that'll do it for this week's Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. You can find Matt Ford at Matt_4D and I'm at Davis_VanOptor. Before we go, here is our stat of the week. Mishi Batshuayi scored his sixth goal against Hanover in his seventh Bundesliga appearance. It is the best scoring start for a Dortmund striker in the Bundesliga since Friedhelm Konietzka in 1963. Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week.